I walked past Bruce and stopped in front of Ivy. She stared past me at the two masters, ignoring me. I opened my mouth. As I spoke, the silence split apart and sound came back to my ears with a nearly painful clap, like a tiny sonic boom. I challenge you. Ivy blinked at me as if I'd just appeared.
What did you say?
I challenge you, I said. I kept my face blank and tried very hard not to think about what I was doing. Ivy laughed.
You are mad. I am a master vampire. You cannot challenge me.
But I can meet your eyes, I said. I let a small smile play along my lips. I tried to keep my mind blank. No thought to betray me, no fear to leak out, but of course once I thought of fear, there it was, curling in my stomach. She laughed, high and tinkling like broken glass. It nearly cut skin just to hear it. What the hell was I doing? The wind rushed against my back, nearly flinging me into her. I glanced back in time to see Jean-Claude stagger and a splash of blood spill from his hand. Janos hadn't broken a sweat yet. Whatever I was doing, I'd better do it fast.
After Jean-Claude loses, I'm going to ask Janos to make him fuck me. Your master is going to be everybody's meat, and so will you.
My eyes flicked to the rotted things clawing at Jason. Incentive enough. I turned back to Ivy and met her brown eyes.
You won't do shit. You can't even outstare one puny human being.
She glared at me. Her anger was instantaneous, like fire springing out of a match. I watched the brown of her irises spread across her eyes from a space of less than 10 inches. Her eyes were shining pools of dark light. My pulse threatened to choke me, and a little voice in my head was screaming, "Run away! Run away!" I stood there and stared her down. She was a master vampire, but a young one. 100 years from now, she'd have eaten me for breakfast, but right now, tonight, maybe, just maybe, she wouldn't. She hissed at me, flashing her fangs. "Oh, that's impressive," I said. Like a dog showing its teeth.
This dog could tear your throat out.
Her voice had gone low and evil, crawling along my spine until I spent most of my effort not to shiver. I didn't trust my voice not to shake, so I spoke low and soft and very clear.
Try it. See how far you get.
She darted forward, but I saw her move, felt her come for me. I threw myself backwards away from her, but she grabbed my arm and lifted me off my feet with her elbow braced so that she could hold me aloft. Her strength was incredible. She could have crushed my arm and I couldn't have done a damn thing about it. Kisa was suddenly there.
Put her down, now!
Ivy put me down. She threw me across the room. Air rushed past me, the world blurring so quickly it was like being blind. The air stopped rushing, and down I came. Chapter 26. Falling does not cover the speed and abruptness of being thrown from less than 10 feet high. I smacked into the wall and tried to slam my arms and hands against it to take some of the momentum before my head smacked into it. I slid down the wall, though slid implies something slow, and there was nothing slow about it. I collapsed at the base of the wall in a crumbled, breathless heap, blinking at bright, jarring images that didn't quite make pictures yet. The first image that came clear was a rotted face with a patch of long, dark hair dangling from its scalp. The vamp's tongue rolled behind broken teeth. Something black and thicker than blood spilled with a plop out of her mouth. I pushed to my knees and found skeletal arms wrapped around my shoulders. The blonde's dried, fang-filled mouth whispered in my ear.
Come to play.
Something hard and stiff poked my ear. It was her tongue. I scrambled away, but claws caught in my jacket. Hands that should have been weak as dried sticks were like steel bands.
They broke the truce, ma petite. I cannot hold him long.
I had a moment to glance up and find Jean-Claude on his knees, with both hands extended towards Janos. Janos stood still, but he did nothing else. I had a few moments, nothing more. I stopped trying to get free of the two vampires. They swarmed over me, and in the mess of arms and legs and body fluids, I drew the Browning. I fired it point blank into the rotted one's chest. She staggered, but didn't go down. fangs sank into my back, and I screamed. A gun exploded from across the room, but there was no time to look. Jason was suddenly there, pulling the blonde off me. I fired into the rotting skull of the brunette. She finally collapsed onto the floor in a puddle of liquid and jerking limbs. I turned back to Jean-Claude and found him nearly prone on the floor, a pool of blood in front of him. He had one arm still held outward towards Janos. Janos made a small flicking motion, and blood flew in an arc from Jean-Claude's body. He collapsed to the floor, and power rushed outward, blowing back my hair. The world suddenly stank of rotting corpses. I gagged and pulled the trigger on that long black body. Janos turned. It seemed like slow motion, as if I had all the time in the world to aim and fire again, but somehow he was facing me when I pulled the trigger the second time. The bullet took him squarely in the chest. He staggered, but didn't go down. I sighted on that round, skeletal head. His white hand came up and slashed the air. And impossibly, I felt like some invisible claw had slashed my arm. I fired, but my aim was a little off. The bullet grazed the side of his face. He slashed at me again, and I saw blood start to drip down my hands. Scare tactics. It didn't hurt that much, not nearly as much as it would hurt if he got his hands on me for real. A second gun sounded, and Janos staggered as a bullet took him in the shoulder. Larry was behind him, gun out. My vision faded, as if fog was rolling in behind my eyes. I lowered my aim to the larger target of his upper body and pulled the trigger again. I heard Larry's bullet go high and wide into the wall behind me. A startled, "Hey!" let me know Jason was still back there. I saw Janos go for the door, like watching slow motion through a fog so thick I could barely see. I fired twice more and knew I hit him at least once. When he was out of the room, I fell forward onto all fours and waited for my vision to clear. Hoped it would clear. Through my ruined vision, I saw Jean-Claude still lying motionless in a pool of his own blood. The question that came into my head was, is he dead? A stupid question about a vampire, but it was still the first thing I thought of. I glanced behind me and found Jason scattering bits of the two female vampires around the floor. He was tearing at them with his bare hands, cracking their bones and throwing them far away from each other, as if by sheer destruction he could wash away what they'd done to him. Bruce lay on his back by the wall. Blood had soaked into his tuxedo. I couldn't tell for sure, but he looked dead. Ivy and Kisa were nowhere to be seen. Larry was still standing across the room, gun extended, as if he didn't realize that Janos was gone. He was frowning. Everybody was up. Everybody was moving except Jean-Claude. Shit. I crawled towards him, not trusting myself to stand with my vision so spotty. It seemed to take a long time to reach him, as if more than my eyesight wasn't working quite right. My vision was mostly clear by the time I got to him. I knelt in a thick pool of his blood and stared down at him. How do you tell if a vampire is dead? Sometimes he didn't have a pulse or a heartbeat or didn't breathe. Shit, again. I holstered the Browning. There was nothing here right now to shoot, and I needed my hands. I bled on my shirt and looked at my hands for the first time. It looked like fingernails had scraped down both of them, a little deeper than normal, but they'd heal. Probably wouldn't even be a scar. I touched Jean-Claude's shoulder, and the flesh was soft, very human. I rolled him over onto his back. His hand flopped against the floor with a bonelessness that only the dead have. Some trick of the night had made his face beautiful again. The most human I'd ever seen it, except for the fact that no one was that pretty. I checked for the big pulse in his neck. I held my fingers against his cooling skin and felt nothing. Something like tears welled against my eyes, and my throat was tight. But I wouldn't cry, not yet. I wasn't even sure I wanted to. When is dead dead for a vampire? Is there such a thing as CPR for the undead? Hell, he breathed some of the time. He had a heart, and it beat most of the time. Not beating couldn't be a good thing. I positioned his head, pinched his nose closed, and blew a breath into his mouth. His chest rose with it. I tried two more breaths, but he didn't breathe on his own. I unbuttoned his shirt and found the spot above his breastbone and pressed 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way to 15 compressions. 2 breaths. Jason staggered over to me, then collapsed to his knees. Is he gone? I don't know. I pumped with everything I had in me, hard enough to break ribs on a human being, but he wasn't human. He lay there, his body moving only when I moved it, as loose and boneless as only the dead can be. His lips were half-parted, his closed eyes edged with the black lace of his thick eyelashes. His curling black hair still framed his pale face. I'd pictured Jean-Claude dead. I'd even thought about killing him myself once or twice. But now that his death was a fact, I didn't know how to feel. It didn't seem fair, somehow. I'd brought him here. I'd asked him to come, and he came. And now he was dead. Well and truly dead. And it was partially my fault, partially my doing. If I killed Jean-Claude, I wanted to actually pull the trigger and watch his eyes as he died. Not like this. I stared down at him. I thought about no more Jean-Claude. This beautiful body rotting at last in the grave it so richly deserved. I shook my head. I couldn't let that happen, not if I could save him. I only knew one thing that all dead respected, craved. Blood. I tried to breathe life into him one more time with one difference. I smeared my blood on his mouth first. My lips touched his, and I tasted the sweet, metallic taste of my own blood. Nothing. Larry knelt beside us. Where did Janos go? He hadn't been able to see through the fog, but I didn't have time to explain. Watch the door. Shoot anything that comes through. Can I let the girls go? Sure. I'd forgotten about the girls. I'd forgotten about Jeff Quinlan. I'd have traded them all for Jean-Claude to blink his eyes at me. Not if the choice had been offered to me as an either-or, but just now they were strangers. He wasn't. More blood, maybe, Jason said softly. I looked at him. You offering? Neither of us can feed him back to full strength without dying, but I'll help, he said. You fed him once tonight already. Can you donate twice? I'm a werewolf. I heal quick. Besides, my blood has more kick to it than a human's. More power. I really looked at him then. He was covered in slime. A big black smear covered most of one cheek. His blue eyes didn't look wolfish. They looked haunted. Hurt. There are things that harm a lot more than physically. I took a deep breath and slid one of my knives out of its sheath. I sliced my left wrist. The pain was sharp and immediate. I placed the wound against Jean-Claude's lips. Blood welled into his mouth. Blood filled his mouth like wine pouring into a cup. It seeped out the corner of his mouth and slid down his cheek. I stroked his throat to make him swallow the blood. How he'd laugh to know I'd finally opened a vein for him. More blood spilled from his unresponsive lips. Damn it. I breathed into his mouth and got a taste of my own blood. I made his chest rise, breathing in my own blood. I thought one word at him. Live. 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 A shudder ran through the body. The throat convulsed, swallowed. I pulled back from him. He caught my wrist as I moved it back from his chin. His grip hurt. I could feel that unnatural strength that could break bone. His eyes were still closed. Only the grip on my wrist let me know we were making progress. I put a hand on his chest. He wasn't breathing on his own yet. No heartbeat. Was that bad? Good? Indifferent? Hell, I didn't know. Jean-Claude, can you hear me? It's Anita. He raised up in a small motion and pressed my bleeding wrist to his mouth. He bit me, and I gasped. He used both hands to press my wrist to his mouth and sucked me. In the middle of sex, it might have felt good. Now it just hurt. Damn, I said. What's wrong? Larry asked. It hurts, I said. I thought it was supposed to feel good, the blonde girl said. I shook my head. Not unless you're under hypnotic control. How long will this take? Larry asked. As long as it takes, I said. Watch the door. Which one? Oh, hell, just shoot anything that comes through it. I was feeling lightheaded. How much had he drunk? Jason, I'm getting a little woozy here. I tried to pull my wrist free, but his hands were like iron forged to my skin. I can't get him off. Jason pulled at the pale hands, but couldn't budge them. I could tear the fingers off one at a time and get you loose, but... yeah, Jean-Claude would be pissed. Dizziness was coming in waves. Nausea started to build in the pit of my stomach. I had to get him off me. Let go of me, Jean-Claude. Let go of me, damn it! His eyes were still closed, his face blank. He fed like a baby with single-minded determination, but this baby was draining my life away. I could feel it going down my arm. My heart was beginning to pound in my ears as if I'd been running, pumping the blood faster. Feeding him faster. Killing me faster. Spots were dancing in front of my eyes, the darkness beginning to eat the light. I drew the Browning. "What are you doing?" Jason asked. "He's going to kill me. He doesn't know what he's doing. I'll still be dead." "Something's moving around at the head of the stairs," Larry called. "Great." "Jean-Claude, let go of me now!" I pressed the barrel of the gun to the flawless skin of his forehead. Darkness was eating my vision in great moving bites. Nausea burned up my throat. I leaned over him and whispered, "Please, Jean-Claude, let me go. It's your ma petite. Let me go." I sat back up. "Vampire's coming," Larry said. "Hurry up." I stared down at that beautiful face locked on my arm, eating me alive, and squeezed. His eyes flew open. I moved my whole finger to keep from squeezing down. He lay his head back onto the floor, still holding my wrist but no longer feeding. His mouth was crimson with my blood. The gun was still pointed at him.
"Ah, ma petite, haven't we done this before?"
"The gun," I said, "but not this." I drew my wrist from his reluctant hands and sat back with the Browning cradled in my lap. Nausea and darkness flew inside my head like clouds driven by the wind. I saw Larry crouched by the foot of the stairs, gun out. But it was like looking down a tunnel, distant and not as important as it should have been. Jason lay down on the bloody floor. I blinked at him. "The neck hurts less," he said, just as if I'd asked. Jean-Claude crawled on top of him. Jason turned his head to one side without being asked. Jean-Claude pressed his blood-stained mouth over the big pulse in Jason's neck. I saw the muscles in his mouth and jaw as he sank fangs into the tender skin. Even if I'd known the neck hurt less, I wouldn't have offered it. It looked too much like sex. The wrist at least let me pretend we weren't doing something intimate.
"Anita!"
I turned back to the stairs. Larry was crouched there alone with his gun. The two girls had moved back away from the door. The blonde was having hysterics again. Couldn't really blame her. I shook my head, lifted the Browning in a teacup grip, and pointed it at the door. I needed the extra arm to steady me. There was a faint tremor to my arms that wasn't going to help my aim much. Power breathed through the room, prickling along my skin. You could almost smell it like perfumed sheets in the dark. I wondered if Jean-Claude and I had given off that kind of power when he'd fed off me. I hadn't noticed it. Something white appeared in the doorway. It took me a second to figure out what it was. A white handkerchief tied to a stick. "What the fuck is that?" I asked.
"A flag of truce, ma petite."
I didn't look away from the stairs to that thick, honey-dipped voice. Jean-Claude sounded better, or worse, than ever, each word like fur rubbing along my tired body. His voice was thick enough to wrap around all the aches and pains. He could make them go away. I just knew it. I swallowed and lowered the gun towards the floor. "Stay the fuck out of my head."
"My apologies, ma petite. I can taste you in my mouth, feel your frantic heartbeat like a treasured memory. I will curb my enthusiasm, but with effort, Anita. With great effort."
He sounded like I had let him have just a little sex and he wanted more. I glanced at him. He was sitting beside Jason's half-naked body. Jason was staring at the ceiling, eyes heavy-lidded like he was half asleep. Blood trickled from two new puncture wounds in his neck. He didn't look like he'd felt much pain. In fact, it looked like it had felt good. I'd taken the edge off Jean-Claude's need, and Jason had gotten a smoother ride. Bully for him.
"May we talk?"
A voice from the hallway, a man's. I couldn't place it. Hell, I was having trouble focusing on anything, let alone who the disembodied voice belonged to.
"Anita, what do you want me to do?" Larry asked. It's a flag of truce, I said. My words felt slurred, though they sounded clear enough. I felt almost drunk or drugged. It was a bad drunk, a dangerous downer.
Magnus stepped into the doorway. For a second, I thought I was seeing things. It was so damned unexpected. He was dressed all in white from his tux to his shoes. The cloth seemed to shine against his dark skin. His long hair was tied back with a loose white ribbon. He had the handkerchief-coated stick gripped in one hand. He walked down the steps in a graceful, almost dance-like movement. It wasn't a vampire's glide, but it was close. Larry kept his gun trained on him. "Stay where you are," Larry said. He sounded a little scared, but like he meant it. The gun was pointed nice and steady.
"We've discussed the fact that silver bullets don't work on the Fae."
"Who says this gun has silver bullets?" Larry said.
It was a good lie. I was proud of him. I was certainly too gone to have thought of it.
"Anita?"
Magnus looked past Larry like he wasn't there, but he didn't come down those last few steps.
"I'd do what he says, Magnus.
Now what do you want?"
Magnus smiled and spread his arms away from his body. To show he was unarmed, I guess. But I knew, and Larry knew, that weapons weren't what made him dangerous.
"I mean you no harm. We know that Ivy broke the truce first. Serafina offers her most sincere apologies. She asks that you come directly to her audience chamber. No more tests. We have all been unforgivably rude to a visiting master."
"Do we believe him?"
I asked of no one in particular.
"He speaks the truth," Jean-Claude said.
"Great.
Let him pass, Larry. You sure that's a good idea?"
"No, but do it anyway."
Larry pointed his gun at the floor, but he didn't look happy. Magnus walked down the stairs, smiling, mostly at Larry. He walked past him and made a show of giving him his back. It was almost enough to make me wish Larry would shoot him. He stopped a few feet in front of the rest of us. We were all still on the floor, sitting, or in Jason's case, lying. Magnus looked down at us, amused, or bemused.
"What the hell are you doing here?" I asked.
Jean-Claude glanced at me.
"You seem to know each other."
"This is Magnus Bouvier," I said.
"What are you doing here with them?"
He loosened the tie at his collar and spread the stiff cloth. I was pretty sure what he was trying to show me, but I couldn't see from the floor. I wasn't at all sure I could stand without falling over.
"If you want me to take a peek, you're going to have to come down here."
"With pleasure."
He knelt in front of me less than 2 feet away. He had two healing bite marks on his neck.
"Shit, Magnus. Why?"
He looked at me, eyes flicking to my bloody wrist.
"I might ask you the same thing."
"I donated blood to save his life. What's your excuse?" He smiled.
"Nothing half as nice as that."
Magnus undid the ribbon and let his hair fall like a curtain around his shoulders. He looked at me with his turquoise blue eyes and crawled on all fours towards Jean-Claude. He moved like he had muscles in places that people didn't. It was like watching a great cat move.
People just didn't move like that.
He knelt in front of Jean-Claude so close they were almost touching. He swept his hair to one side and offered his neck.
"No,"
Jean-Claude said.
"What's going on?" Larry asked.
It was a good question. I didn't have a good answer. I didn't even have a bad one. Magnus slipped off his white jacket and let it slide to the floor. He undid the cuff to his right wrist and pushed the cloth back. He offered his bare wrist to Jean-Claude. The skin was smooth and unbroken. Jean-Claude took his hand and raised the skin to his lips. I almost looked away, but in the end I didn't. Looking away is like lying to yourself. You pretend it isn't happening, but it is.
Jean-Claude brushed his lips across the skin, then released Magnus's hand.
"The offer is generous, but I would be drunk indeed if I added your blood to theirs."
"Drunk?" I asked. "What the fuck are you talking about?"
"Ah, ma petite, you do have a way with words."
"Shut up."
"Losing a quantity of blood makes you grumpy," he said.
"Fuck off."
He laughed, and the sound was sweet. It had a taste just outside description, like some forbidden candy that was not just fattening but poisonous. But what a way to go. Magnus stayed kneeling, staring at the laughing vampire.
"You won't taste me?"
Jean-Claude shook his head,
as if he didn't trust himself to speak. His eyes glittered with suppressed laughter.
The blood has been offered.
Magnus crawled back towards me. His hair had spilled forward on one side, so one eye was lost, glittering like a jewel through his hair.
Eyes just weren't supposed to be that color.
He crawled up to me until our faces were inches apart.
A pint of blood, a pound of flesh.
He whispered it, leaning in towards me as if for a kiss. I leaned back away from him and overbalanced. I ended up on my back on the floor. It was not an improvement. Magnus crawled over me, still on all fours, hovering. I pressed the Browning into his chest.
Back off, or bite it.
Magnus crawled backwards, but not very far. I sat up, keeping the gun on him one-handed. The barrel wavered a lot more than normal.
What was that all about?
Jean-Claude said, Janos spoke of taking blood and flesh from us this night. As an apology, Serafina offers us blood and flesh.
I stared at Magnus, still on all fours, still looking feral and dangerous. I lowered the gun. No thanks. Magnus sat back on the floor, smoothing his hands through his hair, brushing it back from his face.
You have refused Serafina's peace offerings. Do you refuse her apology as well? Take us to Serafina, and you will have done what was asked of you,
Jean-Claude said. Magnus looked at me.
What of you, Anita? Are you content that I take you to Serafina? Do you accept her apology?
I shook my head. Why should I?
Anita is not a master, Jean-Claude said. It is my vengeance, my pardon you should be asking.
I am doing what I was told, he said. She challenged Ivy to a test of wills. Ivy lost. I didn't throw her across the room, I said.
Jean-Claude frowned. She resorted to brute force, ma petite. She could not win by force of will or vampire wiles against a human being.
He looked suddenly very serious.
She lost. To you.
So?
So, ma petite, you declared yourself a master, and proved that claim.
I shook my head. That's ridiculous. I'm not a vampire.
I did not declare you a master vampire, ma petite. I said you were a master.
A master what? Human being? It was his turn to shake his head.
I do not know, ma petite.
He turned to Magnus.
What does Serafina say?
Serafina says to bring her. Jean-Claude nodded and stood like he was pulled by strings. He looked fresh and new, if a little bloodstained. How dare he look so good when I felt like shit? He looked down at Jason and me. His strange good humor had returned. He smiled down at me, and even with blood staining his mouth, he was beautiful. His eyes glittered with some amusing secret. He was full of himself in a way I'd never seen before.
I do not know if my companions are able to walk. They are feeling a little drained.
He chuckled at his own joke, putting a hand in front of his eyes as if it was too funny even for him.
You are drunk, I said.
He nodded.
I believe I am.
You can't be drunk on blood.
I have drunk deep of two mortals, but neither of you are human.
I didn't want to hear this.
What the hell are you talking about?
Necromancer with a chaser of werewolf, a drink to make any vampire giddy.
He giggled. Jean-Claude never giggled. I ignored him, if you can ignore an intoxicated vampire.
Jason, can you stand?
I think so. His voice was thick, heavy but not sleepy, more the languor after sex. Maybe I was glad my bite had hurt.
Larry?
Larry walked over to us, glancing at Magnus, gun naked in his hand. He didn't look happy.
Can we trust him?
We're going to, I said. Help me stand up and let's get out of here before Fangface busts a gut. Jean-Claude was doubled over with laughter. He seemed to think Fangface was outrageously funny. Ye gods. Larry helped me stand, and after a second of dizziness I was okay. He offered a hand to Jason without being asked. Jason swayed on his feet, but stayed standing.
Can you walk?
If you can, I can, he said.
A man after my own heart. I took a step, another, and was on my way across the room. Jason and Larry followed. Jean-Claude staggered to his feet, still laughing softly. Magnus was standing at the foot of the stairs waiting for us. He had the jacket slung over one arm. He'd even found the ribbon to tie back his hair. Jason walked wide around the torn bodies of his two would-be lovers and picked his shirt off the floor. The shirt covered the mess on his chest, but the goo was still on his face, and his hair was stiff and nearly as dark as his pants. Even the back of Jean-Claude's clothes and hair were thick with congealing blood. I had my own share of blood and goop. Good thing I wore mostly black tonight, didn't show dirt as badly. The crimson blouse was looking a little worse for wear. Larry was the only one without any blood or gore on him. Here was hoping he could keep up the good work. The two girls had hidden under the stairs while we discussed things. I was betting it was the brown-haired girl's idea to hide. Lisa seemed too scared to think, let alone do anything smart. Not that I could blame her, but hysteria gets you nowhere but dead. The brown-haired girl walked over to Larry. The blonde came along for the ride, her hands dug so tightly into the other one's torn blouse it would have taken surgery to remove them. "We just want to go home now. Can we do that?" Her voice was a little breathy, but for the most part solid. I stared into her brown eyes and nodded. Larry looked at me. "Magnus?" I said. He raised his eyebrows, still waiting by the stairs like a tour guide or a butler ready to escort us up. "You called? I want the girls to leave now, safe." He glanced at them. "I don't see why not. Serafina had us collect them mostly for your benefit, Anita. They've served their purpose." I didn't like the way he said that last. "Safe, Magnus. No more harm. Are we clear on what that means?" He smiled. "They walk out the door and go home. Is that clear enough for you? Why so cooperative all of a sudden?" "Would letting them go be apology enough?" Magnus asked. "Yeah. If they go free, unharmed, I'll accept her apology." He nodded. "Then consider it done. Don't you have to check with your master first?" "My master whispers sweetly to me, Anita, and I obey." He smiled while he said it, but there was a tightness around his eyes, an involuntary flexing of his hands. "You don't like being her lapdog." "Perhaps, but there's not much I can do about it." He started up the stairs. "Shall we go up?" Jean-Claude paused at the bottom of the stairs.
"Do you need some help, ma petite? I have taken quite a bit of your blood. You do not recover as quickly as my wolf."
Truthfully, the stairs looked longer going up than they had coming down. But I shook my head. "I can make it."
"Of that, ma petite, I have no doubt."
He stepped close to me, but did not whisper. Instead, I felt him in my mind.
"You are weak, ma petite. Let me help you."
"Stop doing that, dammit."
He smiled and sighed. "As you like, ma petite."
He walked up the steps like he could have flown, barely touching them. Larry and the girls went up next. None of them seemed tired. I slogged up after them. Jason brought up the rear. He looked hollow-eyed. It may have felt good, but donating that much blood is still rough, even on the temporarily furry. If Jean-Claude had offered to carry him up the stairs, would he have agreed? Jason caught me looking, but he didn't smile. He just stared back. Maybe he'd have said no, too. Weren't we all just being uncooperative tonight?
Chapter 27. The silken drapes had been drawn aside. A throne sat in the far right-hand corner. There was no other word for it. Chair just didn't cover that golden, bejeweled thing. Cushions were scattered on the floor around it, heaped like they should be covered with harem girls, or at least small pampered dogs. Nothing sat on them. It was like an empty stage waiting for the actors to appear. A small wall hanging on the back wall had been pushed aside to reveal a door. The door had been wedged open with a triangular piece of wood. The spring air poured through the open door, chasing back the smell of decay. I started to say, "Come on, girls." But the wind changed. It blew harder, colder, and I knew it wasn't wind at all. My skin prickled, the fine muscles along my arms and shoulders twitching with it.
"What is that?" Larry asked.
"Ghosts," I said.
"Ghosts? What the hell are ghosts doing here?"
"Serafina can call ghosts," Jean-Claude said. "It is a unique ability among us."
Kisa appeared in the doorway.
Her right arm hung loose at her side. Blood dripped down her arm in a slow, heavy line. "Your handiwork?" I asked. Larry nodded. I shot her, but it didn't seem to slow her down much.
"You hurt her?"
Larry widened his eyes.
"Great."
He didn't sound great when he said it. Wounded master vampires get cranky as hell.
"Seraphina bids you come outside," Kisa said.
Magnus dropped to the cushions, boneless as a cat. He looked like he'd curled up there before.
"You aren't coming?" I asked.
"I've seen the show," he said. Jean-Claude walked towards the door. Jason had moved up beside him, but back a couple of steps like a good dog. The two girls were holding onto Larry's jacket. He had been the one who unchained them. They'd seen him shoot the bad guys. He was a hero. And like all good heroes, he'd get himself killed protecting them. Jean-Claude was suddenly at my side.
"What is wrong, ma petite?"
"Can the girls go out the front?"
"Why?"
"Because whatever's out there is big and bad, and I want them out of it."
"What's wrong?" Jason asked.
He stood a little to one side. He was flexing his hands, closed, open, closed, open. He'd seemed a lot more relaxed 30 minutes ago, but then, weren't we all? Jean-Claude turned to Kisa.
"Was this one right?"
He motioned to Magnus.
"Are the girls free to go?"
"They may go, so says our master."
He turned to the girls.
"Go,"
he said. They looked at each other, then at Larry.
"Alone?"
the blonde said. The brown-haired one shook her head.
"Come on, Lisa. They're letting us go. Come on."
She looked at Larry.
"Thank you.
Just go home," he said.
"Be safe."
She nodded and started for the far door with Lisa clinging to her. They left the door to the room open, and we watched them walk out the front. Nothing swooped down on them. No screams cut the night. What do you know?
"Are you ready now, ma petite? We must pay our respects."
He took a step forward, looking at me. Jason already stood at his side, nervous hands and all. I nodded and fell into step behind Jean-Claude. Larry stayed at my side like a second shadow. I could feel his fear like a trembling against my skin. I understood why he was scared. Janos had beaten Jean-Claude. Janos was afraid of Seraphina, which meant she could take Jean-Claude without raising a sweat. If she could take the vampire that was on our side, she wouldn't find us much of a challenge. If I was smart, I'd shoot her as soon as I saw her. Of course, we were here to ask for her help. It sort of cut my options. The cool wind played in our hair like it had little hands. It was almost alive. I'd never felt any wind that could make me want to brush it off, like an overly amorous date. But I wasn't afraid. I should have been. Not of the ghosts, but of whatever had called them up. But I felt distant and faintly unreal. Blood loss will do that to you. We walked out the door and down two small stone steps. Rows of small, gnarled fruit trees decorated the back of the house. There was a wall of darkness just beyond the orchard. It was a thick wall of shadows, so black that I couldn't see through it. The naked tree branches were framed against the blackness.
"What is that?" I asked.
"Some of us can weave shadows and darkness around us,"
Jean-Claude said. "I know. I saw it when Coltrane was killed, but this is a freaking wall."
"It is impressive," he said.
His voice was very bland, matter-of-fact. I glanced at him, but even in the bright moonlight I couldn't read his face. A sparkle of white light showed behind the blackness. Beams of cold, pale light pierced the darkness. The light ate away at the dark like paper burns, the blackness crumbling, vanishing as the light consumed it. When the last of the darkness had shredded away, a pale figure stood among the trees. Even from this distance you wouldn't have mistaken her for human, but then she wasn't trying to pass. A pale white luminescence swirled above her head, a glowing cloud, yards across like colorless neon. Vague figures darted out from it, then swirled back.
"Is that what I think it is?" Larry asked.
"Ghosts," I said.
"Shit," he said.
"My thoughts exactly." The ghosts flowed out into the trees. They hung on the dead branches like a froth of early blossoms, if blossoms could move and writhe and glow. The strange wind blew against my face, sending my hair streaming backwards. A long, thin line of phosphorescent figures whirled out. The ghosts came sweeping towards us, low to the ground.
Anita!
Just ignore them, Larry. They can't actually hurt you as long as you keep moving and ignore them. The first ghost was long and thin with a wide, screaming mouth that looked like a smoke ring. It hit me at mid-chest. The shock ran through me like electricity. The small muscles in my arms jerked with it. Larry gasped.
What the hell was that? Jason asked.
I took a step forward. Keep walking and ignore them. I didn't mean to, but my pace took me ahead of Jean-Claude. The next ghost swept over my face. There was a moment of smothering, but I kept walking, and it passed. Jean-Claude touched my arm. I stared into his face and wasn't sure what I saw. He was definitely trying to tell me something. He stepped out in front of me, still staring at me. I nodded and let him lead. It didn't cost me anything.
I don't like this, Larry said in a sing-song voice.
Me either, Jason said.
He was batting at a tiny swirl of whiteness like a tame mist. The more he swatted at it, the more solid it became. A face was forming out of the mist. I walked back to Jason and grabbed his arms. Ignore it. The small ghost perched on his shoulder. It had a large, bulbous nose and two half-formed eyes. Jason's arms tensed under my hands. Every time you notice them, you give them power to manifest themselves, I said. A ghost hit me in the back. It was like a lump of moving ice in the center of my body. It crawled out the front of my body like a cold rope being pulled through me. The sensation was unnerving as hell, but it wasn't permanent. It didn't even really hurt. The ghost dived into Jason's chest, and he cried out. Only my grip on his arms kept him from clawing at the thing. Every muscle in Jason's body twitched like a horse being eaten alive by flies. He sagged when the ghost was through him, looking at me with horror-filled eyes. It was nice to know he could be scared. The vampire seemed to have taken some of his courage with their rotting arms. Couldn't blame him. I'd have had screaming fits, too. Larry jumped when a ghost popped through him, but that was all. His eyes were a little wide, but he knew where the danger lay, and it wasn't the ghosts. Jean-Claude came to stand near us.
What is wrong, my wolf?
There was an undercurrent of warning, anger. His pet was not living up to his reputation. We're fine, I said. I squeezed Jason's hand. His eyes were still wide, but he nodded. We'll be fine. Jean-Claude walked towards the distant white figure once more, his movement graceful, unhurried, as if he wasn't as scared as the rest of us. Maybe he wasn't. I pulled Jason with me. Larry had moved to my back. The three of us walked like normal human beings behind Jean-Claude. We looked like good little soldiers except for the fact that I was holding the werewolf's hand. His hand was sweating against my skin. Couldn't afford to have a hysterical werewolf. My right hand was still free to go for a gun or a knife. We'd hurt them once. If they didn't behave themselves, we could finish the job. Or at least go down trying. Jean-Claude led us among the naked trees with the ghosts crawling over the bare branches like phantom snakes. He stopped a few feet away from the vampire. I almost expected him to bow, but he didn't.
Greetings, Seraphina.
Greetings, Jean-Claude.
She was dressed in a simple white dress that fell in folds of shining cloth over her feet. White gloves covered her arms almost completely. Her hair was gray with streaks of white, left unadorned save for a headband of silver and pearls. It wasn't a headband, probably called a coronet or something. Her face was lined with age. Delicate makeup had been added, but not enough to hide the fact that she was old. Vampires didn't age. That was the whole point, wasn't it?
"Shall we go inside?"
she asked.
"If you like,"
he said. She gave a faint smile.
"You may escort me inside, as you did of old."
"But it is not olden days, Seraphina. We are both masters now."
"I have many masters serving me, Jean-Claude."
"I serve only myself," he said.
She stared at him for a space of heartbeats, then nodded.
"You have made your point. Now be a gentleman."
Jean-Claude took a deep enough breath that I heard it sigh from his lips. He offered her his arm, and she slid one gloved hand through it, her hand resting on his wrist. The ghosts floated downward behind her like a great flowing train. They brushed past the rest of us with a skin-prickling rush, then floated upward, hovering about 10 feet off the ground.
"You may walk with us," Seraphina said. "They will not molest you."
"Comforting," I said. She smiled again. It was hard to tell in the moonlight and ghostly glow, but her eyes were pale, maybe gray, maybe blue.
You didn't need to see the color to not like the look in them.
"I have looked forward to meeting you, necromancer."
"Wish I could say the same." The smile didn't widen and didn't fade. It didn't move at all. It was like her face was a well-constructed mask. I raised my glance to her eyes for just a moment. They didn't try to suck me under, but there was an energy in them, a deep burning that pushed at the surface of her being like a banked fire. Move a log just wrong, and the flames would come licking out and burn us all up. I couldn't judge her age. She was stopping me. I'd never met anyone that could actually stop me. Trick me into believing them younger, yes, but not just glare at me and keep me from doing it. She turned and walked through the door. Jean-Claude helped her up the steps as if she needed it. The easy distance of the blood loss was receding, leaving me real and alive, and wanting to stay that way. Maybe it was Jason's hand warm in my own, the sweat on his palm, the reality of him. I was suddenly scared, and she hadn't done a damn thing to me. The ghosts flowed into the house, some pouring through the door, some sliding through the walls. Watching them pull free of the wood, you almost expected a sound like a plop, but it was utterly quiet. The undead make no noise. The ghosts bounced along the ceiling like helium-filled balloons, poured down the walls and back of the throne like milky water. They were translucent near the candle flames, like bubbles. Seraphina sat down in the corner on her throne. Magnus curled in the cushions at her feet. There was a flash of anger in his eyes, there, and gone. He wasn't enjoying being Seraphina's boy toy. That got him an extra point in my book.
"Come sit by me, Jean-Claude,"
Seraphina said. She motioned to the cushions on the opposite side from Magnus. They'd have made an interesting pair.
"No,"
Jean-Claude said. That one word was warning enough. I drew my hand slowly from Jason's. If we really were going to fight, I'd need both hands. Seraphina laughed, and with that sound, her power broke open and crashed on us poor humans. The power rode down on me like pounding horses. My whole body vibrated with it. My mouth was too dry to swallow, and I couldn't quite get a full breath of air. She didn't have to touch me to hurt me. She could just sit on her throne and throw power at me. She could grind my bones into dust from a nice, safe distance. Something touched my arm. I jerked and turned, and it felt like slow motion. It was hard to focus on Jean-Claude's face, but once I did, the grinding power receded like the ocean pulling back from the shore. I took a deep, shuddering breath, then another. Every breath was firmer.
"Illusion,"
I whispered.
"Fucking illusion." "Yes, ma petite."
He turned from me and went to Larry and Jason, who were still standing spellbound. I looked back at the throne. The ghosts had formed a glowing nimbus around her, most impressive, but not nearly as impressive as her eyes. I had one wild glimpse of eyes that seemed to go on forever. Then I stared at the hem of her white dress as hard as I could.
"Can you not meet my gaze?"
I shook my head. "No."
"Can you really be that powerful a necromancer when you cannot even meet my eyes?"
I wasn't just not meeting her eyes. I was hunched over. I straightened but didn't move my eyes. "You're only about 600 years old. I raised my eyes slowly, inch by inch up the white dress until I could see her chin. "How the hell did you get to be this powerful in that amount of time?"
"Such bravado. Meet my eyes and I will answer you."
I shook my head. I don't want to know that badly. She chuckled, and the sound was low and dark. It slid down my spine like something loathsome and half alive.
"Ah, Janos, Ivy, so good of you to join us."
Janos glided through the door with Ivy at his side. Janos looked more human than he had since I'd first met him. His skin was pale but fleshy. His face was still thin, and he couldn't have passed for completely human, but he looked less monstrous. He also looked healed. Shit.
Is something wrong, Necromancer?
Seraphina asked. I hate to waste that many bullets. She gave that low chuckle again. It made my skin feel tight.
Janos is very talented.
He walked past us. I could see bullet holes in his shirt. At least I'd ruined his wardrobe. Ivy looked dandy. Had she run when the shooting started? Had she left Bruce to die? Janos went down on one knee among the cushions. Ivy knelt with him. They stayed there, head bent, waiting for her to notice them. Kisa moved to stand beside Magnus, bleeding, her arm held close to her side. But she glanced from the two kneeling vampires to Seraphina and back again. She looked worried. Something was up. Something unpleasant. She left them kneeling and said,
What business brings you to me, Jean-Claude?
I believe you have something that belongs to me, he said.
Janos?
She said. Janos rose to his feet and went back out the door. He was out of sight only a moment, then came back carrying a large cloth sack like something Santa Claus would have carried. He untied the cord that held it shut and emptied the contents on the floor at Jean-Claude's feet. Splinters of wood, none of them big enough to make a decent stake, fell into a medium-sized pile. The wood was dark and polished where it wasn't white with new cuts.
With my compliments, Janos said.
He shook the last bits of wood out of the sack and knelt back on the steps. Jean-Claude stared down at the splintered wood.
This is childish, Seraphina. Something I would have expected from you centuries ago. Now,
he motioned at the ghosts, at everything.
How have you managed to subdue Janos? You feared him once. State your business, Jean-Claude, before I grow impatient and challenge you myself.
He smiled and gave a graceful bow, arms out to his sides like an actor. When he raised up, the smile was gone. His face was like a beautiful mask.
Xavier is in your territory, he said. Did you truly think I would feel the presence of your pet necromancer and not sense Xavier? I know he is here. If he challenges me, I will deal with him. Speak the rest of your business, or was that it? Did you come all this way to warn me? How touching.
I realize you are more powerful than Xavier now, Jean-Claude said. But he is slaughtering humans. Not just the attack on the missing boy's home, but many deaths. He has gone back to cutting up his pets. He draws attention to us all.
Then let the council kill him.
You are master in this territory, Seraphina.
It is your task to police it. Do not presume to tell me my duties. I was centuries old when you died. You were nothing but a catamite for any vampire that wanted you. Our beautiful Jean-Claude.
She made beautiful sound like a bad thing.
I know what I was, Seraphina. Now I am master of the city and follow the council's laws. We are not to allow humans to be slaughtered in our territories. It is bad for business.
Let Xavier kill hundreds. There are always more, she said.
Nice attitude, I said. She turned her attention to me, and I wished I hadn't said anything. Her power pulsed against me like a great beating heart.
How dare you disapprove of me,
Seraphina said. I heard the rustle of her silk dress as she stood. No one else moved, and I heard her dress slither across the cushions, sliding along the floor as she came closer. I did not want her to touch me. I stared up the line of her body and saw her gloved hand strike outward. I gasped. Blood dripped down my hand. Shit! It was a deeper cut than Janos had managed, and it hurt more. I met her eyes, anger making me brave or stupid. Her eyes were pure white, like captive moons shining from her face. Those eyes called to me. I wanted to fling myself into her pale arms, to feel the touch of those soft lips, the sharp, sweet caress of her teeth. I wanted to feel her body cradling mine. I wanted her to hold me like my mother once had. She would take care of me forever and never leave, never die, never desert me. That stopped me. I stood very still. I was standing at the edge of the pillows. The hem of her dress spilled at my feet. I could have reached out a hand and touched her. Fear pounded my heart in my head. I could taste my pulse on my tongue. She spread her arms wide.
Come to me, child. And I will always be with you. I will hold you forever.
Her voice was everything good. warmth, food, shelter from all the things that hurt, all the disappointment. I knew in that moment that all I had to do was step into her arms and all the bad things would go away. I stood there with my hands balled into fists. My skin ached to have her touch me, hold me. Blood still dripped down my hand from where she'd cut me. I rubbed my fingers into the cut, making the pain sharp. I shook my head.
Come to me, child. I will be your mother forever.
I found my voice. It sounded rusty, choked, but it came. Everything dies, bitch. You aren't immortal. None of you are. I felt her power waver like a pebble thrown in a pool, and I moved back a step, then another. It took everything I had left not to run from that room, and to keep running. To run and run and run away from her. I didn't run. In fact, I stayed about 2 steps back, looking around. People had been busy. Janos stood next to Jean-Claude. They weren't trying their vampire wiles on each other, but the threat was open, and there. Kisa stood to one side, blood pooling on the pillows at her feet. There was a look on her face that I couldn't read. It was almost amazement. Ivy was standing now, staring at me, smiling, pleased that I'd nearly fallen into Serafina's arms. I wasn't pleased. No one had ever come closer, not even Jean-Claude. I was beyond scared. My skin was cold. I had broken her hold over me, but it was temporary. She might not be able to trick me with her mind, but I'd felt her mind brush mine. If she wanted me, she could have me. It wouldn't be pretty. No illusions, no tricks, just brute fucking force and she could have me. I would never run into her arms, but she could crush my mind. That she could do. The knowledge was almost calming. If there was nothing I could do to prevent it, might as well not worry about it. Worry about the things you can control. The rest will either work themselves out, or they'll kill you. Either way, no more worries.
You are quite right, Necromancer, Serafina said. We are all mortal in this room. Vampires can live a long, long time. It makes us forget that we are mortal. But immortality eludes even us.
It wasn't a question, and I agreed with everything she said, so I just looked at her.
Janos told me you had an aura of power, Necromancer. He said he used it against you as he would another vampire. I did it just now when I slashed your hand. I have never known a human that could be harmed so.
I don't know what you mean about an aura of power.
It is what allowed you to slip my magic. No human could have withstood me, and few vampires.
Glad I could do something to impress you.
I never said I was impressed, Necromancer.
I shrugged. Fine, maybe you don't give a damn about humans, or keeping a low profile. I don't know about your council, or what they'll do to you for not helping us, but I do know what I'll do.
What are you babbling about, human?
I am the vampire executioner for this state. Xavier and his crew took a young boy. I want him back, alive. You help me get him back alive, or I go to the courts and get a death warrant on you.
Jean-Claude, talk to her or I will kill her.
She has the weight of human law behind her, Serafina.
What is human law to us?
The council says that it rules us as it rules the humans. Refusing the human laws is the same as breaking with the council.
I don't believe you.
You can taste the truth of my words. I could never lie to you. Not 200 years ago. Not now.
His voice was very calm, very sure.
When did this new law go into effect?
When the council saw the benefit of being mainstream. They want the money, the power, the freedom to walk the streets in safety. They don't want to hide anymore, Serafina.
You believe what you say. That much is true,
she said. She looked down at me, and the weight of that gaze, even with me looking away, was like a giant hand mashing me down. I stayed on my feet, but it was an effort. You should bow down to such power. Grovel before it. Worship it. Stop it, Serafina, I said. Cheap mind tricks won't work and you know it. The cold lump in my stomach wasn't so sure.
You fear me, human. I can taste it on the back of my tongue.
Oh, goody. Yeah, you scare me. You probably scare everybody in this room. So what? She drew herself up to every inch of her tall, thin frame. Her voice was suddenly soft, breathing down my skin like fur.
I will show you.
She gestured outward with one gloved hand. I tensed, waiting for another cut, but it never came. A scream cut the air and whirled me around. Blood ran down Ivy's face. Another cut appeared.